Welcome to the Integrated Schools Podcast. I'm Andrew, a white dad from Denver.
And I'm Courtney, a white mom from Los Angeles.
Episode 15, Gifted, Talented, and Segregated. We're joined today by Dr. Allison Rhoda. She's an assistant professor of education at Molloy College in New York, and she's done a bunch of research on gifted and talented programs, and particularly how white and privileged families navigate them.
Yeah, Dr. Rhoda's work is based in New York City, and while some of the things might be specific to the Big Apple, most of the themes here are pretty broadly applicable across the U.S.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how gifted and talented programs, and especially those that exist within a larger school, like a separate track kind of thing, do the work of segregating kids.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also, you know, how parents may understand that even though they value diversity, even though they see the effects of segregation that some of these programs have, they still really feel a strong pull to get their kids into a program.
Yeah, the labels seem to be really, really important, right?
Yep.
You know, and I think that the value of those labels and how much work it often takes to game the system is pretty common in districts across the country.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's most interesting to me about this conversation is sort of the fundamental question is like, is organizing kids, this whole concept of gifted and talented, is it really a good way to organize our kids at schools at all?
Yeah, and it's definitely the heart of it to me, too.
Yeah. And, you know, just as a little disclaimer here, this conversation, Dr. Rhoda's research is focused pretty squarely on white and privileged families. So we recognize that the same issues don't necessarily apply for kids of color, and we plan to try to grapple with that in a future episode. So keep that in mind.
So let's hear the interview.
Let's do. But you know what, Courtney?
No.
Before we hear the interview, we've got to do the ask.
I know.
You don't want to.
I don't. I hate this part, but it's real. So if you have found these podcasts to be valuable and if you want to be a part of helping this all-volunteer effort continue, please consider donating. $25, $50, $500 goes a really long way.
That's right. This content is free for you, but it's not free to make it, and it's not free to put it up on the internet. So we'd be really grateful if you would consider. Go to the website, integratedschools.org. Help us keep the podcast going by hitting that donate button. It's right up there in the corner. Super easy.
Yeah. Thanks in advance. And now let's hear the interview with Dr. Rhoda.
Fair enough. That wasn't so bad.
We're happy to be here with Dr. Allison Rhoda from Molloy College.
Thank you for inviting me, Courtney and Andrew.
Glad to have you.
Because I'd love to hear a little bit about what your project was and what you found.
So I think I'll go back to the origins of this topic and my interest in the topic. So in 2006, I conducted a study with my advisor at Teachers College. It was a district-wide school choice policy, and we were interviewing parents about the change to the policy and their perceptions of the different school choices that they had. And what struck me from those interviews was, I think there were three G&T programs that some of the parents were talking about and feeling uncomfortable with how segregated those programs were inside schools that were overall very diverse. But when you walk down the hallway and saw the G&T program classrooms versus the general education classrooms, you could just tell by the students enrolled in either classroom which program they were in.
Yeah.
So they were uncomfortable with how segregated the G&T programs were. So when it came time to choose a topic for my dissertation, I wanted to look at this in more depth, this topic, this problem of G&T student identification and the admissions policy and parents' perceptions of a school that has two separate tracks. So, you know, these are school within school programs.
And so that means like there's a gifted and talented program on the same campus as a regular school.
Exactly.
Yes.
And these are elementary schools. They start in kindergarten, and the children, if they're identified in kindergarten as gifted, they are in that class from kindergarten to fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And they are with the same students that are also labeled gifted all the way through. So they're basically never in a classroom with the general education students. And if they're not identified and they do not pass the test in kindergarten, they can retake the test every year to get in, which happens a lot. So it is a form of tracking because students are separated all day to receive different instruction. And so I was interested in asking parents how they make sense of these two programs in a school, how they choose which program to choose for their children and why. So it's a form of school choice. It's a form of tracking. And the admissions policy, what I found was that it's really just, it's set up to create these distinctions, and the segregation that we see is, it's perfectly designed to have this result. Because anytime that you have a requirement to be admitted into a program, it's going to, by design, resegregate students by achievement, and this particularly standardized tests are correlated with race and class.
Yeah.
And so we really shouldn't be surprised that the gifted and talented programs in New York City are disproportionately white, Asian, and middle class students.
Do you know what those numbers are?
So for the larger student population in New York City schools, it's about 30% white and Asian students and about 70% Black and Latino students. And that's flipped for the G&T program. So 70% of students in gifted and talented programs are white and Asian, and 30% are Black and Latino.
And do you know if that's kind of the case in other districts at all?
Well, I know that this is a nationwide issue. There is a G&T identification problem nationwide. And I think it does mirror the national numbers, where white and Asian students are about 70% nationwide in gifted programs. In New York City, less than 1% of G&T students are English language learners.
Mm.
And these programs are also, like, through my research, I found that they're strategically placed in higher income community school districts in New York City. Yeah. And within schools that have neighborhoods with low-income students. And it's a way to attract white families, Asian families to the G&T programs.
To integrate the building without actually integrating the classrooms.
And because we see in across the city, neighborhood schools that are under-enrolled, that are located within neighborhoods that are more diverse. So diverse neighborhoods, but the white families in particular leave those neighborhood schools for gifted and talented programs.
So you write a lot, Allison, about, you know, how white families game the system.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for gifted and talented?
So in my research, I interviewed 42 white families in the school. The G&T program in the school that I studied was mostly white. That's the sample of parents that I wanted to interview. So while they question the measures that are being used to define giftedness in the New York City context, they still are gaming the system by test prepping. So keep in mind, their kids are three. And because everyone else is prepping their children, they feel like they have to prep their children, or they would risk not getting a high enough score on the G&T test. They acknowledge that they are gaming the system, that really the G&T test score is a reflection of their advantage and privileged position in society, and everything that their children have been exposed to at preschool and just in their life. You know, when you're testing a four-year-old, they haven't really had a lot of formal education yet. So they acknowledge that this label is more about their advantage. Some of them felt that it was unfair and that the policy was flawed. But what I found in this study and other studies with parents around school choice is that they want to apply to all of their options. They have a lot of options. And so G&T is just one more option for them. And they think it will set them up for future opportunities for the better middle schools, the better high schools, even the better colleges. I mean, they're thinking this is the end game here. They're thinking when their children are four, they want to set them up on this right pathway.
And so just really quickly to go back to test prep, what does that look like for a three-year-old, four-year-old kid? I mean, I think it looks like a certain amount of money,
yeah.
But like tutors, like that they're taking their kids to tutors every week.
There are students that will prep or tutor, come to your house and provide tutoring, like college students. There are teachers that are offering this service to parents. Parents that used to be teachers are offering this service. And it costs hundreds of dollars per hour. And the tutors come to their house and tutor them on the tests. There's workbooks. There are private school choice consultants that parents can pay. I mean, parents said they spent thousands of dollars on this.
On their 3 or 4 year olds.
Yes. And if they do not initially get in for kindergarten, then they retest the next year and they prep again.
I'm assuming the test is designed to not be something you can study for.
Right.
Right. I mean, like conceptually is supposed to just be like a measure of aptitude, not of how much studying you did.
Right.
But does that hold up?
Well, when certain community school districts have so many students scoring at the 99th percentile,
yeah,
I think they're figuring out that this test prepping is working. I mean, another way that the system can be gamed is by the priority system. So students who have siblings in the school get priority. So if you're an only child or you're the first child in your family to go to a school, you need to get a 99 or 98 on the test. That's the highest score is a 99th percentile. If you have a sibling in the school, you only need a 90th percentile to get in.
So invest in your oldest kid.
Right.
But spend the money on the test prep for them and then you don't have to worry about it for your younger kid.
Right. Other thing that is prioritized is living in the district. So some districts, community school districts, they don't have any GNT programs. And then some districts that are the higher income districts have 3 or 4 different programs to choose from. So, you know, that leaves a lot of families out. I mean, this really is a system that, because it's based on one test score, because of all of the things we're talking about with, you know, parents using their privilege to hoard opportunities, and they're allowed to do that because of how the policy is designed, they're systematically excluding Black, Latino, low-income, English language learners from access to these programs. I always say I don't fault the parents in this situation because, I mean, they're going through this process, but really the New York City Department of Education, the way that they have this policy set up and designed, allows them to do this. So I'm a mom. I have 4 boys. If they took a test and they said that one of my sons was gifted, I would probably feel good about that at first. But then, and I think every inclination, you know, you want to give your child every opportunity. You want to do the best for your child, right? But I think parents in this context need to really step back and question what, if I would allow my son to go into the gifted and talented program, that would just add to the segregation in the system. And that would take away opportunities from other children. And what is that message that I'm sending to him and to his classmates? And I really think parents need to question some of their choices here.
Yeah, I think the labels
are
really hard to resist as a parent.
It's a magical thing. Right. So the day before the test, and I heard this from parents, the day before the test, you could say, oh, I hate the test. I hate that they have to go through this. I'm putting so much pressure on my child. But then the next day you get the 99 and you're like, oh, well, I guess the test isn't so bad.
Right.
And parents said to me, oh, you know, what am I doing right? I must be doing something right.
Mm.
Things like that. But then taking a step back and thinking, okay, if I'm prepping my child to take this test, are they really gifted then?
Right. Are you gifted as the parent for prepping your kid in the right ways?
Right.
And knowing how the system works.
The stigma of this too. So some of the white parents I interviewed had children in the general education program in kindergarten and first grade. And the stigma of that label for the parents and the children caused them to retest for the gifted program the next year because it's like a status symbol. It's like, what are you doing wrong if you're in the general education program? You must be a bad parent.
Yeah.
You must not be involved in your children's education. And then for the students, that's the dumb kids class. And the GNT is the smart kids class.
So the kids actually take on that label too. Like that label is meaningful even to the, you know, 5 and 6 year olds.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they don't know in kindergarten, first grade, but eventually they find out that there's 2 programs and they have these labels. And the parents try to, you know, talk in code language around their children. They try to hide it and which program they're in. And then there was a group of parents. I interviewed 9 parents that had children in both programs at the same time, which was really interesting and surprising, actually. I didn't expect that. So their older child was typically in the gifted and talented program. Their younger child didn't make that cutoff, that 90th percentile cutoff. So they were in the general education program. And that caused some confusion and some tension at home around the labels. And
it's problematic. I mean, there are any number of problems with it, I think. But I feel like it's one of the things that leads to this idea of the meritocracy, right? That it's just a test and it's multiple choice and you just fill it out and the people who do well on it get this thing and the people who don't do this thing. And it's like as if that the test is somehow removed from the racist system that it was built in. Mm-hmm. Then the idea is like, well, my kid just happens to be really smart. And so they just happen to need these additional services. And maybe you know some of this, but it would be interesting to see what the effect on sort of ideas about race and competency, the kids who end up in one of these schools have. If, you know, if you're telling the kids that this is a meritocracy, that this is a test that just determines how smart you are or how not smart you are in a sort of unbiased way, but then they look and their classmates, all the classmates of theirs in the G&T program are white or Asian and come from affluent families, and all the other kids in the general ed population are black or brown and, you know, a greater portion of them qualify for free and reduced price lunch. Like, what message are those kids learning about race in that context?
And that's what I'm saying. I think parents need to really think about what are we teaching our children when we prep them for these tests, when we have them take the tests, when we really push for them to be in this separate program. And I didn't interview students, but, you know, from the parents' point of view, they were noticing, especially by fourth, fifth grade, who was in either program and what was unique about the two different programs, especially in the older grades, because the younger grades, kindergarten, first grade, that was when some white students who didn't get the 90th percentile, you know, they were in the general education program. It was much more racially balanced and diverse. And parents appreciated that, actually, you know, that diversity and having them be exposed to that diversity at such a young age. But the lure and the pressure from their social networks of, you know, this special G&T program, it's the better classroom, it's the better program, it'll set your kids up on this right track, you know, really caused parents to retest every year.
Right.
Until eventually most of them switched over. And then they're not friends with their, you know, their old friends from the gen ed program anymore because they really don't see them that much anymore.
And were parents of color testing over and over again? Like, is that a...
No, they were not. So that was a big distinction that I found. The Black and Latino parents that I interviewed, most of them applied, had their children tested in preschool and tried to get into the gifted and talented program. None of them made the cutoff because they didn't know about prepping. Even if they knew about the prepping, they said they wouldn't have done that. And once they got to the school, they saw how segregated it was and really did not want their child to be the only Black or Latino child in the G&T program.
Right.
For social reasons. And once they were at the school in the general education program, they saw that there wasn't that much difference academically between the two programs. And the white parents didn't see much difference either, by the way.
So this is really fascinating because we don't want it to just be a label. We feel like it needs to matter, right? That my kid actually is gifted and that they're going to be challenged in this program in ways that they wouldn't be challenged in, you know, a quote, regular classroom. But there was even an acknowledgement that the gifted and talented wasn't conferring any academic benefit.
Right. Even from the white parents. And it was interesting too, with the parents that had experience in the gifted program with their older child, and now their younger child's in the general education program. They said they had the same exact homework from the G&T versus the gen ed, the same poem to memorize, the same curriculum.
Wow.
And the same teacher, actually. They switched a teacher from a G&T position to a gen ed position, which could have been to appease some of the white parents in the kindergarten coming in and not getting into the G&T program. Oh, we still have this exceptional teacher that used to teach G&T. And she would tell the families, I teach this like it's a G&T classroom.
There's the perceived cost of not getting into GT, which I feel like is, you know, a lot of it is sort of like the smog that we talk about. The some piece of it is the social stigma, the way that we talk about what it means to be a good parent, what it means to sort of get the best for your kid, and that element of it that like leads to the perception that if you don't get your kid into the GT program, you don't care or you don't love your kid enough. You're not doing a good job of being a parent in the way that we think you should be a parent if you don't get your kid in there. Mm-hmm. But the actual cost of not getting into a GT program doesn't seem to actually be that big, right?
You know, according to parents, there were some peer effects. So they thought that being around other students that passed this GNT test, that made them smart. And so being around smart kids was something that they wanted for their child.
Right.
The other thing about this was just going through the process was seen as a marker of good parenting. It's not easy.
Right.
It can be complicated. It's a marker of status and privilege, and because it's also not cheap.
Right. I mean, like you said, right, it seems like perfectly designed to segregate. And I guess this is maybe where the sort of specifics of New York, it looks a little bit different in every city that you go to. Mm-hmm. And different places have different policies around it and different ways of testing, whatever. But the sort of underlying truth of it seems to be that people in charge who are usually white and privileged create systems that allow white and privileged people to hoard resources.
Yeah.
And this seems like a perfect example of that.
In general, when you hear anything about the GNT program, it's all about the admissions system. It's all about who's getting in and how can we tweak it so it's more fair. Oh, we'll tweak the test. We'll make this test so it's you can't prep for it. It's harder to prep for. So much less time is spent talking about what is actually different about the curriculum and the pedagogy in the gifted program. How is it different than the general education program? And that's really telling to me.
Yeah, that just indicates it's really about the label, right?
Yeah, and it's a way to attract a certain population into the public schools. Yep. It's really seen like a magnet for advantaged families to stay in the system.
People whose other choice is private school.
Right.
Who have the privilege of being able to choose a private school or, well, okay, I guess maybe I'll save some money and instead go to this GT program.
Right.
Or I don't have to move out of the city to the suburbs or whatever.
I mean, that's their last resort. Kind of if they don't get into the GNT program, parents will say that. That's my last resort. We'll move to the suburbs. But you either can buy a home in a neighborhood school catchment area that's really wealthy. And so disproportionately white and higher income just because of the neighborhood demographic. You can try to get into the GNT program, which is mostly white and Asian across the city. In certain districts, there are these boutique charter schools, which are disproportionately white and higher income typically.
Yeah.
And private schools.
So I want to jump back a little bit to when you were talking about these programs like conferring some sort of peer effect advantage, right? Like it feels like it might be advantageous to be around smart kids.
Yeah.
Does that actually matter? Like if your kid is around quote unquote smart kids, which as you're showing is much more about privileged kids, but is your kid more likely to get into Harvard or Stanford or whatever? Is that real? And, you know, and maybe putting that another way, like what do you lose by seeking that out? That more like smart, quote unquote, smart heterogeneous spaces.
I would argue that the gifted and talented programs are heterogeneous just because of the way that they're identifying these students when they're four. Who knows what their achievement level is going to be when they're 8 or 10. And I heard that parents were tutoring in fourth grade for the standardized tests because the fourth grade tests are used for middle school placement. But the research shows that there are benefits to detract classrooms and integrated schools and integrated classrooms. So when we're, separating children by perceived ability based on one test score when they're four, that's not even what the Gifted Association recommends. You know, it should never be based on one, what they call objective measure.
Yeah.
It should be multiple measures.
Well, and you know, maybe even sort of one level before that, what is actually giftedness? What does that mean?
Right.
So I guess this is maybe the question that I have is like, Are there situations in which segregating kids is worthwhile? Is there any compelling reason for any kids that they would need to be segregated from the rest of the school population? You know, maybe at all. I mean, I think there are definitely some special needs kids who maybe benefit from being separated from the general population. Although I think there's a big push in that community for more integration into the sort of general population. Uh-huh. Is there any compelling reason that kids would need to be segregated for giftedness?
Well, I can tell you that most suburban districts will have some type of pull-out program maybe once a week where they go and they do enrichment activities. You know, I just wrote an article recently with Haley Potter from the Century Foundation, and we argue that a better way would be to push in services or just provide enrichment opportunities to all students in the school.
Right.
So, you know, it goes back to the test and how we're identifying students, but it also goes back to who are we serving? Who are we giving enrichment to and who are we leaving out?
There's some sort of number, some made up number, I don't know what it is, but of like batch educatable kids, right? And then there's kids who need more support one way or another or learn differently and may need special services, right? But we think of gifted kind of separate from that. We don't treat it as a 1%. We treat it as 20% of kids are gifted. You know what I mean?
As whatever percent gets my kid in, right?
Right.
Right. We're talking about, I think, like a difference of scale, right? Yeah. Like there are a lot of privileged kids who score 90th percentile or better. There's a good number of those kids. I don't think those kids need to be accommodated in order to receive an equitable education. There are some kids, I would guess, who actually need some additional accommodations to be able to be served equitably. And I worry, sort of fundamental framework is that if the kid is not thriving in some way, it is because of something the school is doing that they need to accommodate the kid in some different way. So, you know, we think about most kids as needing to figure out how to adapt to the system of education.
Yeah.
And we think about how do we need to adapt our system of education to serve the GT kids.
But schools really should be serving all children and providing supports to really bring out every student's unique strengths.
Yes.
And gifted and talented really is a misnomer. There's no talent in passing a test. And is this really gifted?
Right.
Is that the right label for it? And I know parents were talking about that in the school that I studied, just changing that name to something else. But even if they change the name, it's still something different, special for the parents, for the students. Everyone eventually finds out, which
right.
It's like reading levels, honors, it's advanced placement. It's whatever the label they put on a track, it's different.
We would be benefiting our national education system to talk a lot more about, you know, in classroom differentiation. Is that gaining momentum as some kind of response to the problem of gifted and talented perpetuating segregation? Are people talking about this?
I think even parent groups are talking about this because they see it as a problem. They see gifted segregation as a problem in their local communities because it's drawing students away from their neighborhood schools. And if they stayed, their neighborhood schools would be much more diverse. You know, even in the gifted programs and the general education programs, all the students come with different strengths and abilities and are at different levels. And I think it's a myth that the gifted classrooms have the best behaved students, the students that are all going to understand every single lesson. And no student will ever struggle with math or reading or, you know, I think all teachers have to learn how to differentiate their lessons. And right. I think professional development for that, for a culturally responsive education, helping teachers connect with their students and provide curriculum that's multicultural and culturally diverse. That gets a lot less attention, though, in the media, in the policy world. But it should be discussed more and resources should go towards that.
Yeah.
So if you had a magic wand, how would you fix this? Like, what would you suggest to change the system? Like, would you recommend doing away with all gifted and talented? What would you advise?
I would advise phasing out the GNT mm-hmm. programs. I mean, I think there's three choices, really, that you could stick with the status quo, which is not working. You could try something else to try to diversify the GNT population, of students, but then we're still separating kids by perceived ability, which creates stigmas and lots of problems within schools. I think especially in schools with the two tracks that are segregated, phasing those programs out and replacing them with a school-wide program that provides access to enrichment, to field trips, to project-based learning, to critical thinking. I mean, I can say that parents are really stressed out about where their child is going to go to school. The system that we have with GNT testing just causes so much anxiety and pressure and competition on the system that it would make parents' lives a lot easier if they would phase the programs out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Calm down. I mean, I feel like everybody feels like the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
That like GT program or not GT program, if you are a white privileged family with a white privileged kid, like your kid will still carry that with them wherever they go.
But when you're in a school and it's right in your face every day, the segregation within the school, that has to change. There's something wrong with that. It's flawed. I'm very surprised there has not been like a lawsuit.
Right.
Yeah.
I know you said that there's not a lot of difference in these classes, and we talked a tiny little bit about gifted as being kind of another form of tracking, but this sense that, you know, my kids come in knowing all of these things and being really ready and not having to struggle with like all these things that, you know, are really grounded in privilege, and they are ready academically to kind of take off. And we think that they're more ready. And I don't know if they're more ready or not. But if one kid comes in knowing all their colors, all their numbers, and how to write the alphabet, and other kids come in not knowing their colors or writing at all, what would you say to nervous mom who's, you know, who's like really thinking about that and worrying about that?
That it's not going to harm your child at all to be with students from different abilities and backgrounds. It's actually going to open their eyes to different perspectives.
But aren't they going to get bored?
I think that's an excuse. They're not going to be bored. That's the teacher. That's the curriculum. That's the pedagogy. That's the school. And the research shows that, yes, there are gaps. There are kindergarten readiness gaps when students enter kindergarten. But if you're going to put them in different programs right off the bat, That gap's just going to grow. So.
And those kids in the segregated space are, I would argue, not going to do nearly as well sort of socially and in terms of like becoming the types of human beings that we want.
Exactly. I think most of the parents I spoke to understood that, and they understood their privilege and would say things like, my child will be fine no matter what, kind of contradicting what they're actually doing to give them this extra perceived advantage by being in the gifted program. And then some parents across the city that I've spoken to actually have options that are high quality and diverse options, and they're able to choose a school that matches their beliefs. But when we have a system that has these stratified options, and segregated options, it's hard for parents to choose schools that match their values.
I feel like you're being really nice right now.
I'm trying to be nice to parents because I know that I'm not trying to blame parents. I mean, they're part of the system and they play the system and they know the rules of the game and they can play the system to their advantage for sure. But the system also needs to change. It needs to be top down as well as bottom-up support for creating more options that parents actually want.
I feel like the system is responding, right? Like in order to keep butts in seats, right? In order to stem the declining enrollment tide, we're going to give white parents what they want, which is this nice, you know, label of specialness. And maybe in some districts, extra funding for gifted magnets that get smaller class sizes, whatever, you know, so at some point it's a chicken and the egg conversation, right? We are still supporting the system by playing the game and knowing that we are playing a game in this way that's conferring advantages, you know, based on skin color or wealth. I guess I'm just not always as nice about the choices that we make.
Most of the parents I spoke to were critical of the system and felt bad on some level about their choices and value diversity within the school. So why even have two programs?
So I'm going to guess that we are likely to get a few emails about this episode.
I think you're probably right about that one.
The goal in talking about gifted and talented in this way, like in terms of race and segregation, isn't to really render a verdict on whether or not there are truly or are not truly gifted kids or what that definition of gifted should be, but maybe more to think about the ways in which the gifted programs are another way that white and or privileged families use the system to get stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like the special labels, maybe whiter classrooms and access to resources that may or may not even be different, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. What is or is not a gifted kid is certainly not in my wheelhouse to determine, you know. I don't know what factors should determine if a kid needs extra support to get an equitable education, but it just feels like there's an awful lot of white and privileged kids who get the gifted label.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems, at least in my experience, that it's often more about getting the label than whatever actual supports come along with it. I think the school Dr. Rota studied sort of brings that to light, right? I mean, she said they had largely the same curriculum between their classes, the same teachers, the same poem they were reading, but there was still this real powerful draw to the GT program, and it was still segregating the school within the building. You know, I think even in the situation where the gifted curriculum is actually different from the quote-unquote regular classrooms, we have to think about whether those different classrooms are just, whether that's actually the way we want to organize our schools.
Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking a lot about, right? The labels, this kind of perceived need to have this extra specialness that sort of swirls around our kids.
Yeah.
And I know that Dr. Rota really heaps a lot of the blame on the system, on the policies that are in place. And we don't really have to be gentle with that critique, right?
Yeah. I think that's a legitimate critique. Yeah.
But I think it's also a system that is responding to parents, right? And particularly yes. to white and or privileged parents. And yes, changing policy is important. But as long as we're grabbing for this honey jar, that policy lift is going to be really, really heavy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in that way, gifted is similar and also different from the other ways that white or privileged parents tend to hoard resources in the systems we have, you know, from dual language to STEM or arts programs. I mean, you know, gifted, it's your kid gets this special label, yeah. but these other programs, it's sort of like the school that gets the label, right?
I guess I just wonder if we can ever get to the idea, the radical idea of school. Just
school.
School. Do it.
Right.
Do it really well. Invest deeply. Pay educators generously and fund schools. And then you could just send your kid to school. Not the International Baccalaureate Academy, but school.
Just school.
Yeah.
Just school. That could be our new slogan.
That would be a good one. That would be a good one. And I like the just, you know, like it's just simply, but then it's also like justice. And it's late. I'm stretching. Yeah.
That is a stretch. But you know what's not a stretch, Courtney?
Oh, no.
To say that our listeners' financial support would be very much appreciated.
That was a really, really nice segue.
Thank you.
So please contribute. Go to integratedschools.org and click that little donate button. And keep sending us your emails and voice memos to hello@integratedschools.org. And here is a note from Bridget in Minneapolis.
My name is Bridget. I'm a white mom from Minneapolis, and our family sends our two kids to integrating schools. I think I care about integrated schools because of my own experience growing up. I went to an integrating elementary school, kindergarten through fifth grade, and had a really positive experience. And then in sixth grade, my parents white-flighted to the suburbs, and they talked about how we were moving for better schools. And my experience was so the opposite of that. The schools weren't better at all. They were just whiter. I don't know if I was at a formative age or what, but it became very clear to me as a middle schooler that there was a real disconnect between the values we were talking about as a family and the value they had made to move us to the whiter school. And I made a commitment that when it was our turn to pick schools for our kids, that integration was going to be at the top of the list, and living our values, being consistent with those values, and gaining all the positive educational opportunities that come from integration was going to be our priority.
Thank you, Bridget. Thank you, listeners. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah. And we are grateful to be in this with you as we all try to know better and do better.
See you next time.